It's the Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Let's suppose you are a third-party candidate representing the Constitution, Libertarian, or Green Party, and you want to run for office in Pennsylvania. How do you get on the ballot? While a Republican or Democrat needs to come up with 2,000 signatures to earn a spot on the ballot for their spring primary, in 2014, the requirement for a minority party candidate was over 16,000 signatures, though that number has ranged as high as 67,000 in 2006. Seem fair? Well, U.S. District Judge Lawrence Stengel of the Eastern District of Pennsylvania didn't think so either. He ruled the third-party candidate requirements are unconstitutional and that state law imposes an unfair burden. So what kind of a game-changer is this? I'm joined now by phone by Oliver Hall, director and co-founder of the Center for Competitive Democracy. He joins us by phone from Washington. Oliver Hall, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Also with us is Steve Sheets. He is immediate past Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania chairman. Steve Sheets, good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me, sir.
And Steve joining us by phone from Philadelphia. And we can take your questions and comments via email at esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh. Gentlemen, what is your reaction to the federal judge's ruling about third-party candidate requirements? Oliver Hall, let's begin with you.
Sure. Well, it's a great victory for not only these minor parties and their supporters, but for all Pennsylvanians. In the last better part of a decade, Pennsylvania elections have essentially been a closed system that has allowed the Republicans and Democrats to force any of their competition off the ballot simply by threatening to file a challenge to the minor party's nomination papers. And one important aspect of this electoral scheme that was struck down, which you didn't mention in the intro, Paul, is that when these challenges are filed, not only do the minor parties have to come up with their own workers to defend the nomination petitions and to review every signature on them for their validity, but also they have to run the risk that at the end of the process, they may be ordered to pay their private party challengers litigation costs. And in recent years, twice on two different occasions, that has been more than $80,000. So that kind of financial burden and that kind of threat is enough to eliminate really anyone from an election, except I guess maybe Donald Trump. but it's certainly been enough to ensure that for most general elections for statewide office in the last decade, minor parties have been eliminated from the ballot, whereas before this system started operating this way, which only happened in following the 2004 election. Before that, these minor parties regularly appeared on the ballot, and voters had several choices in statewide elections, and that just stopped when this system came into being. So for Pennsylvanians who like voter choice, who want an open, fair, equal system, this is a big win.
Yeah, and I figured, you know, you would bring this up, and nominating petitions are subject to legal challenges that can easily swamp a candidate's resources. As you pointed out, it happened to Ralph Nader here, although he's, you know, in his case, he could afford it, but it still, you know, became a burden to him that made his candidacy not viable because of the whole legal battle that ensued. Pennsylvania is the only state in which petition challenges are handled by the courts. Why is that?
Well, that's a good question. It's certainly not necessary. In every other state, executive branch elections officials do this work. And that's really a requirement of landmark Supreme Court decisions coming out of the civil rights era, which struck down poll taxes and mandatory filing fees for candidates and other financial burdens that states were imposing on candidates, voters, and political parties. And what emerged out of those decisions is the rule that states cannot require candidates, voters, and political parties to shoulder the financial burden of the state's own legislative choices with respect to regulating elections. And that's what Pennsylvania was doing by essentially outsourcing the job of validating nomination petitions that the state itself is requiring these parties to submit, and it's outsourcing that job to private parties. And the problem here, as we've seen in the last decade, is that it encourages the political opponents of these minor parties to file nomination petition challenges as a means to harass them and to threaten them with severe financial burdens if they don't withdraw their nomination petitions. And that's how they were able to essentially close up the process and eliminate their competition so that Pennsylvanians were forced to choose between one Democrat and one Republican only, if that, in statewide elections.
Steve Sheets, as a recent past, I should say immediate past, Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania chairman, what is your reaction to this decision by the federal judge?
Actually, I'm really excited for the work Oliver Hall did, both for him and for all third parties as a whole. As the current thought monopoly, it's got to change. And while the legislators, and this goes on to the point that this is just a stop on the track towards success here. We have the Voters' Choice Act that's been languishing for years, and we've had legislators saying, well, yes, people in Pennsylvania, they deserve a choice. We should have a choice. And they keep talking about it and talking about it and talking about it, and then they put that Voters' Choice Act on the back shelf. Recently, it came up again, and it's still being considered in the state house. And my suggestion is that we still need a call to action by the people in Pittsburgh, by the people all across Pennsylvania, to get in touch with the legislators and say, hey, look, we really needed to fast track the Voters' Choice Act because, frankly, we need more choices on the ballot.
Are you confident, though, that that's going to happen? Because it really is not in the... As you look at things and the way that the legislature is structured, it's Democrats and Republicans. It's really not in their best interest to make things easier for third-party candidates, is it? So why would they be in any hurry to act on it?
That's the reason why we need, it's critical that all people who are interested in something more than the antiseptic choices that they already have, we have a choice between one answer to a question and an answer to a question that's pretty close to the one that you just heard by the opposing candidate. Let's just say, recently we had court decisions come down where people were talking about gay marriage finally being acceptable. Well, the Libertarian Party has been talking about this for the past 44 years of its existence. The Green Party, they've been on board with this since their existence. And if we have more choices, more third-party candidates, even if people don't vote for the third-party candidate, that third-party candidate is going to bring a completely different aspect to the whole conversation. The debate between this point and a point that's not too far off from this point is going to be null and void because we're going to have this point and then the polar opposite. We're going to have several different directions coming at people. And those people in Pennsylvania who have been crying out for something other than Coke or Pepsi are going to finally be able to order orange soda for a change.
We want
so,
some-
yes, I am excited and I am hoping, I am very much hoping that the people in Pennsylvania do help us with this and contact their legislators to help them move it forward.
And gentlemen, talk a little bit about, you know, how the candidacy, I mean, one of the prime examples of this, and I believe it was cited in the court case, was what happened to Ralph Nader. Talk about what happened there and how a voice that could have, you know, added something to a particular race was essentially silenced.
Paul, if I could, I'd like to answer that because I also represent Mr. Nader in my private practice, and I've spent the better part of 10 years trying to correct the really outrageous smear and slander against him, which was that he, after decades working with an unblemished record for integrity in the public sphere, was accused of attempting to get on the ballot by fraud. When the judge's own findings in the court case, if anyone ever bothers to review them, will reveal that
the reason Mr. Nader was kicked off the ballot was that more than 30,000 signatures on his nomination petitions were invalidated based on narrow technicalities and not based on any allegation of fraud. So, for example,
that signature is invalidated, or people move from Oak Street to Pine Street, that signature is invalidated. And yet these law firms, Reed Smith is a law firm that challenged Mr. Nader and accused him of fraud, and there was no evidence for that accusation, which is a quote from now Chief Justice of the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, Saylor, said there's no evidence to support these allegations, and yet merely asserting them was enough to get Mr. Nader thrown off the ballot and then have this $80,000 judgment imposed against him, despite the fact that, as we all now know, it was unconstitutional from day one. What did voters lose when Mr. Nader was silenced from Pennsylvania's election and when they were not allowed to vote for him? Well, he was the only candidate who was opposing the war in Iraq. At least I should say the only between the major party candidates and Mr. Nader, he was the only one. Also, he supports single payer health care, which figures prominently in the current debate. And as Mr. Sheets also just mentioned, he was a strong early supporter of gay marriage. So, again, it's all about more voices and choices on a wide variety of issues that the major parties really didn't want the voters to be exposed to. They like to eliminate their competition and force voters to choose between the two of them, but that's not the way elections have historically worked in the United States, notwithstanding the fact that we refer to our system as a two-party system. That has never meant that it's a system in which only two parties participate, but just one where there may be two predominant major parties, but there have been always many minor parties participating in that system. And as a matter of fact, historically, minor parties can take credit for a lot of the major social reforms that we now take for credit. For example, abolition of slavery, women's suffrage, the minimum wage, the 40-hour work week, Social Security. All of these were first championed by minor parties, only to be adopted by the major parties when the major parties were forced to do so because they saw that the minor parties were generating support for them.
Yeah, I was going to mention, too, that, well, two points I wanted to make. One is that the 30,000 signatures that Ralph Nader's people gathered that were called into question are just those 30,000 alone are 28,000 more than what the major party candidates are required to get on the ballot, which is just 2,000, which is striking. And then the second point that I think you bring up that's important to mention here is that years ago, there were more parties involved. You had the Democrats and the Republicans, but you know, you also had the Bull Moose and the, I think it was the Federalists, and you know, there was more of a variety on the ballot, say, 100 years ago than you see today.
That's certainly true. And what it reflects is the fact that 100 years ago, you did not have the major parties taking deliberate action to consolidate their control over the election process by enacting anti-competitive rules and regulations, of which this law and this system struck down in Pennsylvania is only one example. But Steve is right that getting this decision was a big win for the minor parties and voters generally in Pennsylvania. But it really is just one stop on the path toward a more competitive, inclusive, responsive, and accountable democracy. And this Voter Choice Act that has been languishing in the Pennsylvania legislature for years now really needs to be enacted. Senator Mike Fulmer, to his credit, has been reintroducing it for the last several years. And this is nothing radical. It's modeled on legislation that is currently in place in Delaware, where it works just fine. And it simply makes the signature requirements equal for major parties and minor parties. So if these signature requirements are sufficient to regulate the major party ballot, then they're certainly sufficient for minor parties as well. And I would say that the other thing that needs to happen, other than enacting the Voter Choice Act, which is Senate Bill 495, is that the system that Pennsylvania has, which only Pennsylvania has, of allowing private parties to challenge nomination petitions has got to be eliminated. And that can be eliminated by changing one word of existing law, and that is existing law provides that the Secretary of State, nomination petitions are submitted to the Secretary of State, and existing law says that the Secretary of State may review the nomination petitions to determine whether they comply with the signature requirement. Change that word may to shall, and you can eliminate the entire problem of major parties attempting to lock up the political process by harassing their competitors with these challenges. And again, this is not a radical solution. It's, in fact, what every other state does. The Secretary of State in every other state is charged with validating nomination petitions. And the Voter Choice Act is something that's actually in play in Delaware, and it's working just fine.
Ken Krawchuk is a longtime libertarian activist who has twice run for governor of Pennsylvania. He was also a plaintiff in the case recently ruled on by the U.S. District Court. He spoke with Essential Pittsburgh producer Marcus Charleston about his reaction to the ruling. Let's listen.
With this decision, it looks like I'm going to be running again in 2018. I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, you've jumped ahead of me. I was going to ask your reaction to this decision, because you were one of the plaintiffs.
That is correct. I am one of the plaintiffs. I can't tell you how chilling it is to think that you're going to be fined $100,000 just for the crime, quote-unquote, of giving Pennsylvania voters a choice. When I heard about the case being filed, I had to jump on as a plaintiff because it has certainly stopped me from running. I was nominated in 2006 as my party's candidate for Pennsylvania U.S. Senate, but I declined it because, again, I didn't want to risk a $100,000 fine. I want to stay married. You know, I don't want to lose my house. But now with this decision, that's all fallen by the wayside. I mean, my wife and I were celebrating because now I can get back involved in the political process. I can start gearing up for a 2018 run because we know now that that threat of a $100,000 fine is no longer hanging over our heads. I mean, this is very, very liberating.
What office will you be running for in 2018?
Governor of Pennsylvania. I'm a state guy. I ran for governor in 1998 against Tom Ridge and 2002 against Ed Rendell. And both times I set records for the Libertarian Party. I broke every record, number of votes, percentage of votes, amount of coverage. And I was on a roll. But then in 2004, when they started this nonsense of fining candidates, first they fined Ralph Nader in 2004, Carl Romanelli in 2006. I mean, that just put an end to everything right there. But now that it's opened again, governor is what I've been training for. That's what I've been aiming for. So it just makes sense. And it's 3 years away, so I have enough time now to put together a decent campaign, do the fundraising and everything else that's necessary. So the timing of this suit is very good. I was kind of hoping it would be settled by last year.
Have you spoken to other libertarians in the state, and are they energized and interested in running for office again?
Absolutely. The email started pouring in yesterday when the word went out on the street. People who were working on my campaign before saying, Ken, here's our chance. Let's get going again. So I think this is going to be a real energizer for the Libertarian Party because we've had trouble finding candidates. Because you go up to somebody and say, hey, do you want to run? They're like, no, I don't want to get fined, thank you. So now that that threat is gone, I think we're seeing a dam burst here.
And that was longtime libertarian activist and gubernatorial candidate Ken Krawchuk, who was a plaintiff in the case recently ruled on by the U.S. District Court, speaking with Essential Pittsburgh producer Marcus Charleston. So the question I would then put to our guests Steve Sheets, immediate past Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania chairman, and Oliver Hall, director and co-founder of the Center for Competitive Democracy. Will this encourage more independent candidates to run for office?
I have my fingers crossed. I really do. Well, this past year has been difficult as a state chair, as you can imagine.
Sure.
Trying to find candidates and trying to find volunteers for candidates. Imagine as a volunteer, you worked hard. You worked for hundreds of hours during a campaign to gather signatures, and then all of a sudden you find out that not only has all that time been wasted, but the candidate that you gathered signatures for is getting fined for signatures that you gathered because they were invalidated for some reason. It's very disheartening and very demotivating to everybody. So I'm strongly encouraged by this case in that it would really be awesome to bring more people out and more people to run.
And
Paul, I've interviewed not only libertarians but also Green Party members and Constitution Party members in the course of litigating this lawsuit for the last several years, and I have no doubt that people are going to start getting way more involved again. There's just no question about it. If you have to risk house and home to run for public office, you're going to think twice about it if you even decide to do that. And now that risk is removed, you're going to see a lot more participation.
And what are the implications then for Pennsylvania voters?
I think Pennsylvania voters are going to have more choice. They're going to have more. I mean, Oliver brought up women's suffrage before. And just because something is morally reprehensible does not mean it is not legal. And it took decades, almost a century. It took a long time for women to be able to get the right to vote. This is something that's fundamental. They were treated like people who weren't worthy of a thought. Gay people were treated as if there was something wrong with them because they wanted to live together as a married couple. These are things that people can see put to bed, put to rest, and changed. Bring rights to people. That's what we want. That's what all third-party people want. We want to bring more rights to the people. We want to make people's quality of life better. We don't want to have a sterilized ballot choice. We want to have people who are willing to ask tough questions. And I think that's what this is going to do. So again, I want to make a call to action to everybody. Call your legislator. Please call your legislator and tell them, fast track this Voters' Choice Act, man. Make it a law. Let's get everybody here on the ballot. Let's get everybody talking. Let's start changing our world, our state. And I'm excited moving forward that this is going to happen.
Our guests have been Oliver Hall, director and co-founder of the Center for Competitive Democracy, and also Steve Sheets, immediate past Libertarian Party of Pennsylvania chairman, talking about a federal court judge ruling that Pennsylvania's election code sets an unconstitutionally high standard for third-party candidates. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining us here on the program. We appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir.
Coming up, we'll learn about a downtown clinic serving minimally verbal and nonverbal individuals with disabilities. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.